training, and the opportunity was presented to take it in a different direction and talk about commitment in relationships and whether that is something that everybody always wants in their relationships, and also how that affects the relationship and whether it sustains or not. So we have a gentleman joining us here in the studio that brought that up for discussion. So we're going to be asking him his perspective on the story, sharing our own bit of insights. Emily Rose is going to be joining as a coach tonight and helping to dive a little bit deeper into the story and see what else we can uncover in this mystery. So stay tuned. It's going to be a great show. If you care to ask a question or just share your own personal experience about the word commitment in relationship, give us a call, 895-1114. You can also message us on the Facebook page. I'll do my best to read those on the air. And that's Love in the 21st Century. All right, we are going to get started here with some Friendly Fires. Hurting. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by A1 Brake and Alignment Specialists with over 20 years of experience in automotive care. A1 Brake and Alignment Services, all makes and models of cars, trucks, and off-road vehicles and all forms of automotive maintenance and repair, including air conditioning. A1 Brake and Alignment is located at 824 Nord Avenue and can be reached at 894-1149. So we're going to get our show here started. This is Love in the 21st Century, and we are going to be focusing on commitment, which is, you know, Steve O'Brien was joking as he left the studio, you know, he would be a great guest for this show because he's said he's, what, on 33 years of marriage or something like that. So this show is not necessarily about sustaining commitment, exactly. This show is more about just that concept of commitment and kind of how that comes up in relationships and whether, you know, just how that plays a part. So welcome our guest to the studio. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Great.
Yeah. Thanks for that song selection. You want to let us know why you chose that song?
I think the title of the track was Hurting by Friendly Fires, and it's a 10 Snake remix, and it's just funky and good and kind of sad but happy, and it's nice. I like it.
Does it have a reflection into what we're talking about tonight?
I think it would, yeah. Definitely. I think if you can hear that, if you listen to the lyrics and you can feel a little bit from your past relationships, maybe sometimes when you felt really down about a lady or a guy, then yeah, I think it's pretty poignant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. And so, Emily Rose, you're here joining us as a coach tonight.
I am.
So this is going to be a new experience for everybody.
Yeah.
Yourself included.
Yeah, Tammy and I were at brunch the other day. We were talking about this, and it was like, oh, this could be fun.
Yeah. And scary as well.
Yes. and our guest is so, you know, up for the challenge, so that's awesome.
Right.
Up for the experience. So, yeah, we obviously thought that this would be a great topic to cover. We've talked about commitment in different sorts of ways on the show. We talked about commitment, self-commitment, in June. And then I think sometime in July, we talked about it with Steve and Susan Chudy, who actually host the show after, called Ecotopia, from the particular perspective of being married and having children for, you know, 3 decades. So now this is like, you know, when you're still like kind of in new, like I would consider myself a novice to the relationship commitment viewpoint, and sort of what sort of is on that balance beam of relationship, like why be in a committed relationship, why not be in a committed relationship. And you know, I've had the opportunity of having some interesting conversations with you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
About that perspective of you know, keeping titles loose for a reason. So it'll be fun to get into that conversation here shortly. And if you are listening and you'd like to tune, if you'd like to call in to be a part of the conversation, the number's 895-1114. You can also stream this show on the internet at any time. So if you get out of your car and you want to still listen, you can actually go to your computer and go to kzfr.org and stream this via the internet. All right. So
I bet there's somebody listening in their car going, oh my god, she's so talking to me right now.
Yes,
I know, I need to be hearing this show about commitment.
Yes. Yeah. Awesome. So would you like to explain from your perspective why you felt that this was going to make a good show there, sir?
Sure. Well, I think the last time I heard this show, it was on polyamorous relationships.
Another great show.
It was a good show.
And I felt like they raised some good points for me and some feelings about relationships and women of my past and things. And I think that that everyone kind of deals with these commitment issues, whether it's you know, fleeting, whether they're in a marriage, whether they're making a concerted effort to stay single, as in my case. And I think everyone can kind of relate to the commitment issue.
Yes. Absolutely.
Commitment issue. I liked how you went straight to like the word issue. I was actually dancing around that word because it's I feel like it kind of gives it the negative connotation, you know, issue.
Yeah.
It's like commitment choices, commitment perspective. I mean, because like what you just said is a conscious choice to stay single, you know, so maybe it's not necessarily like a commitment issue then. An issue is like avoidance. And then maybe Emily, when she gets into her coaching mode, will let us know what more of what that is about. But that kind of, it seems more like issue to me is like if you're not accepting your perspective and like what you're doing, but you've actually like pretend it doesn't exist and avoid it. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
Okay. Well,
I think it would be kind of fun to start with sort of just going into a little deeper definition of what we're talking about when we talk about commitment here today, or rather commitment issues. We're talking about considering commitment in a typical heterosexual, monogamous, long-term romantic relationship.
Beginning of those relationships. So we're not even talking about like time frame, you know, because I mean getting into those relationships I think is like the first step, right?
No, I think so that's interesting. That's a really good point. Yeah. I think so. I have a book called Break Your Bad Love Habits, and a large one of the bad love habits, right, that I've seen a lot as a self-actualization and relationship coach is the fear of commitment, or it's the bad habits come from the fear of commitment. And there's a word that was dubbed commitment phobia, fear of commitment, that really defines what I think a lot of us in this time face when we're faced with so many choices, so many possibilities. Last week, we were talking to Lisa Kotecki about how so many choices, when you're faced with so many choices, that it's hard to make a decision because the question is always, well, maybe there's something better on the other side. Maybe this person isn't my perfect fit. We're also we're also told from the very get-go, you know, societally, that through Disney movies and things like that, that there is one, you know, soulmate, dream come true, partner, Prince Charming kind of person. And so we set up these expectations to find that one person, and then we're faced with so many choices between people. And if someone's not the perfect fit, it's easy to jump out and bail. And in all of that comes a fear of commitment. We're afraid to commit to someone that is sub-perfect in this ideal world because they're not what we think is going to be, you know, our dream come true partner or something like that. So the fear of commitment doesn't necessarily just happen at the beginning of relationships, but rather it is sort of like a thing that resonates in your system in all of your life at all times until you dive into it and conquer that and move forward. And so through it, into, through, and beyond is how I like to say it. You move into the fear of commitment to move through it and then beyond it. And
is this resonating with you?
It is. One thing I'd like to just point out,
sure.
The fear of commitment thing, I don't think that's my issue entirely. I feel like it's more of a love of freedom.
Well, so the term fear of commitment, definitely, like the word issue, has a negative connotation. But ultimately, when we are so attached to the counter, we develop a resistance to what mm-hmm. we're talking about, right?
Yeah, entirely.
So let's call it a resistance to commitment.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah, but I mean, also, like, I think that there's partially like a choice that's being made, and a choice for a particular reason that might be because of some other, what you were starting to explain, like some past experiences and some.
Well, yeah, but that's what we want to dive into, right?
Right, right. Right. So there's lots of different reasons I feel like that commitment becomes, you know, an issue in a relationship. But like what you're saying is it's underlying and it continues.
And it's starts really early in life. It doesn't really start in adulthood. It's, you know, it's a byproduct of the divorce rate, you know, in our generation with such a high divorce rate, like so many people's parents are divorced. And so early on, I mean, that's one contributing factor. Of course, there are lots of contributing factors, but, and not everyone, you know, immediately early in life or even as young adults, gets this, you know, fear or resistance to commitment. I personally seen interest in self-growth and self-consciousness. As there are more people interested in self-growth and self-consciousness, there are, not self-consciousness, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Self-awareness. Thank you. With more of the population interested in that kind of way of living, there is a leaning towards holding on to the freedoms that come with singlehood. Because when you are in singlehood, you are free to explore yourself more deeply without kind of no holds bar. You know, there's not.
That would be for me one of the main benefits of being single, I think, is to. I think I had this moment maybe a few months ago, maybe 3 months ago, where I felt deep down in my heart that I wasn't somehow attached to another person, whether it was I was in love with someone, whether it was being out of love, whether it was being disgusted or enthralled or whatever. I was just me and dealing with my emotions and clear, and it felt really nice. And it felt like the first time for a very long time that I was able to deal with the issues in my life and not the issues that arise when two people try to share a life or try to split it up or whatever else, you know? So, yeah.
I mean, on a personal note, I totally feel ya. You know, I'm in a relationship right now, and before getting into this relationship, I was on a mission to be single as well. And it was because of the freedom aspect, free to be able to do whatever I want, whenever I want, without checking in with anyone, you know,
yeah.
For myself.
Yeah.
And hopefully as we get more into this story, which I'm hoping is going to start real soon, is realizing that those things can exist in relationships. And really what you're talking about, Emily, is like that conquering of commitment is like You know, I feel like I'm like taking those steps in my own life, like with my commitment ceremony to myself. Like, how do you show up for yourself? How do you protect boundaries for yourself so that you're not dealing with other people's stuff in your relationship? That's work. You got to do it. And you got to have a partner that's willing to do it too. But it's possible. And I think, you know, from hearing from experienced people that have been in marriages for a long time, it's like people retaining their individuality, and that like that's one what keeps them like both sane but also keeps the other person attractive, because you're like, they're not, you know, you're not having to deal with all their stuff all the time. You're self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's like an aspiration that all people should have.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons that we go into conversation a lot about self-love and self-acceptance.
Because mm-hmm.
That's ultimately, you know, when you're in a space of singlehood and you're able to be, you know, exploring your own emotions and lifestyles and getting to know yourself and shape yourself. What were you saying? I lost.
Self-contained.
Oh, right. And that's where you, thank you, get the space to go into, you know, shadow work with yourself and create more self-love and self-acceptance and become more self-possessed, self-contained.
Right. But you can only do that if you're willing to commit to yourself or to another person. I mean, like, if you're in a committed relationship and all this stuff is coming up, like, you know, and you're not committed to yourself to do that work, like, then of course you're going to get out of the relationship, because it's easier not to face yourself. And it's really hard to not face yourself if you're in a relationship with someone going, look at this, look at this, look at this. And you're like, I'm not, like, what's the easiest thing to do? Not be in the relationship, right?
That's the worst, when someone's nagging you to look at yourself.
It is,
get
isn't it?
Get out of here. Oh, the worst.
Right. Well, of course, relationships are mirrors, right? For ourselves, whether we're looking or not.
And I mean, and I don't mean that they're literally nagging at you too. They couldn't just be just doing something that it keeps showing up for you, because, you know, something keeps showing up for you, like, oh, like, this is bothering me. Why is it bothering me? And it's like, you know, it's sort of like that reflection telling you, pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. But unless you're willing to like face up to yourself and go, yeah, what is actually going on? Why is this going on? Then it just, you either get out of a relationship and then get into another relationship, or, you know, do the single thing and never, like, never look at it, because you don't have to look at yourself in that way when you're alone. There's just certain things you don't have to look at when you're by yourself. Like,
and there are other things you get to look at, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you get to get into the light space as well as the shadow space, depending on what kind of work you're doing at the time. Oftentimes, relationships do bring us into kind of a dark, shadowy place within ourselves, and we have to sit there and face a bunch of stuff we don't necessarily want to face. However, I don't know if, or I would say that, you know, committing to the relationship isn't always the answer, because sometimes it's the stuff that you're facing in the relationship isn't healthy for either of you. And the thing is one thing, a word we haven't thrown out there yet is codependence. And there is something about what we're talking about here is that we're not touching on is codependence. In independent, interdependent relationships, there is not... there's not really a susceptibility to losing yourself in those relationships. In codependent relationships, it's easy to lose yourself in a relationship. And that is scary. It is scary to lose yourself in a relationship. It's scary to try to take care of a relationship or somebody else or yourself in relationship to somebody else, you know, so much that you don't have the space to explore yourself and consider your needs as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that's the first relationship I was ever in became codependent. And at the same time, though, when you're looking at your past relationships, you can kind of look at them and say, oh, man, that was so horrible. Oh, I went through such bad experiences with that. But in my case, I feel like all of the relationships that were, from an outside point of view, that were like good, wholesome relationships. Yay, that was fun. We went to the picnic and we went kayaking and da da da. Were great, yeah, but they didn't teach me anything. And all the ones that, you know, I was doing nefarious amounts of drugs with my girlfriend and we were doing dangerous things and having a little bit too much fun, sometimes you turn around and see what you just did and go, oh my God, what just happened? And then a bit later, you start to wonder, question what made you go to those extremes, and why is this person, you know, with you on that journey, and what elements of yourselves are you, you know, kind of touching on with that type of stuff. And that, those are the relationships I feel like I can look back on and go, oh, wow, that's what that was. And like, you know, like, and learn some things from those kind of whirlwinds and tumultuous twisters of love.
So do you want to hop into things here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So, so you had said, you know, that you're basically choosing commitment to singlehood right now.
Choosing singlehood to commitment?
No, you're
committed to being single.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I would say so.
Right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of course that can shift, but what is it about the idea of commitment that you feel resistance around? And this doesn't need to be, you know, it could be a piece of it. It could be, it doesn't need to be the whole thing.
I don't necessarily know if pointing out all the things that I'm afraid of necessarily, I don't know if I'm afraid of commitment. In that case, I think I'd much prefer, I am maybe afraid of commitment in a little bit, in the way that things are expected of you by someone else. And maybe it's because I, you know, didn't have the best parental relationships, and was kind of a wild child and didn't really appreciate people expecting too much from me. I feel like I am a giving person, but when I'm asked to give, it gets a little dirty for me. And that's what kind of complicates things sometimes.
Well, okay, so what I hear you saying when you're talking about that is that in relationships that you have experienced, likely a girlfriend asking a lot of you, and then you maybe find some resistance to doing what they're asking you to do.
Yeah, well, both ways, I'd say. I've been on both sides of the situation in a relationship where someone's asking you to change or asking you to not do something or asking you to do something. I feel like I've been on the exact opposite spectrum where I'm the guy being like, hey, babe, like, you know, why don't you not go out until 4 o'clock every night for the week straight? God damn it, I'm your boyfriend. Have some respect, you know? And so I know that's the entire thing, though. It's like once you're in a committed relationship, then things are expected of you and of your partner. And it just gets dirty. I don't like it.
So what's dirty?
Just feeling like there's strings attached feels dirty to me, and feeling like there's prerequisites to love feels dirty for me, and feeling like someone's not really going to love you unless, you know, you're my boyfriend or you're my girlfriend, and now it's official, you know? It's I feel like a lot of the best quote-unquote relationships, maybe or not, have been with people that we're not in a relationship at all, and we can really just experience each other and have a nice kind of time together, and it's pleasant, and there's no expectations, and it's not like, you know, crazy.
Okay, so so tell me if any of this resonates with you. When in a committed romantic, you know, long-term monogamous relationship, you end up feeling almost claustrophobic, emotionally claustrophobic, like gotta get out of here.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what I'm sensing is that there's like there's just a pressure created within you that feels like it's like,
yeah, outside. Do you want like a scale of 1 to 10 or something for these questions, or because I have a lot of feelings, we might want you to go from 1 to 20 for me. And because I think that I'm I don't get too claustrophobic, because I know that I'm not actually trapped, because I can leave whenever I want to.
Right.
Essentially.
Which is if I had not ever really being committed in the first place.
Well, yeah, that's why, you know, I don't have kids and why I didn't split the mortgage with someone, you know?
Right. But looking at the word and looking at the idea around the word, it's an interesting thing because, and, you know, I've debated this. I don't think there's a right answer or wrong answer necessarily, but, like, we're, you know, because, of course, okay, so I've been in plenty of relationships. Lots of people have been in lots of relationships, and we've all been in committed relationships. Were those really ever committed relationships if we're no longer in them?
Ooh.
Well, sure, because I think, in my opinion, that you can be committed
temporarily
to the
committed
person.
and temporarily?
Not, yeah, because I mean, like, are those persons not in your life anymore? Like, do you like, are you like so against them now? I
no,
mean, I think I'm, like, are you committed to the evolution of your relationship? Because your relationship might not continue to be the relationship of being an intimate partner, but you might still have, you still have a relationship after that. You know, your friends or your
enemies.
Right. Looking at the words, I'm wondering if temporary and commitment are oxymorons to say you're temporarily committed to something. So just really from like a basic definition standpoint, you know, to be temporarily committed.
I think you're either a committed person or you're not. I don't think that you are temporarily committed to things. Like, I think that commitment is something that resonates in who you are. Like, you see things, you know, through. And my perspective of commitment is, like, in my ex-partnerships, am I no longer committed to his success in life? I'm totally hope for his success. I would help him do whatever he needed just because he's not my partner anymore. You know, like, I think that, you know,
yeah,
that
but
changes.
There's plenty of people with plenty of partners that they don't talk to anymore and they don't want to even have to anything to do with anymore, you know, and they
right.
may have been
yeah.
in committed relationships.
So they have a different definition.
And yeah. that's kind of what
yeah.
I was getting at.
Tammy, like, also does have a halo around her head.
Yes.
So
thank you.
She's...
I'm glad you noticed.
I just see headphones.
I'm just kidding. Oh, that's what those are.
Luke Harder.
So, okay, so getting a little bit redirecting back. You know, the feelings that come up when you're in a relationship of claustrophobia, you said that you have even more feelings than that. Do you want to elaborate?
Okay, so let's do an example so that I can kind of illustrate that certain dynamic. About last year, I was with a girl whom I was very into emotionally and intellectually and socially. We were into the same ideology, I guess you'd say. And what happened is, after probably a year of dating, she started nagging me, nitpicking. I don't know how to say that in a not like a good way, but she, it ended up being that she would ask me to not do certain things that I enjoyed doing because she felt it was destructive. And little did she know that I have been very destructive in my past, and that was not what I would consider being destructive, like having a beer with dinner, smoking pot sometimes. And so she would get on my case about things, and that's when things started affecting me and making me think twice about my commitments, as it were.
Okay, so I'm realizing at this moment that we did not, in the beginning of our conversation together, establish kind of why we're talking about this in a coaching kind of role. Typically, you know, coaching is effective when people want change in something, when they want to grow in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. And a coach helps someone, you know, take the issues of the present and grow in a direction they want to go for the future. So if you were to get anything at all out of this something, out of this call, or this call, we're not on the phone, sorry.
Conversation?
I do, yeah.
On the air?
Yeah, on the air. If you want to get something out of this conversation today, what would it be?
I think maybe just like a in-depth kind of look at relationships and commitment from someone who's spent a great deal of time thinking about these things, and versus me, who's just kind of fly by night, kind of, you know, bat out of hell with relationships and stuff. So I think that maybe talking to someone with a little bit more, having a little more credence towards relationships in general would probably be good for me, and kind of looking at things from a different perspective.
What would you be hoping to glean from that person, though? What tidbits of information are the things that you feel like would be inspirational for you?
Or if you helpful. Had, you know, like an expert sitting in front of you, what's the one question you would ask?
An ex person?
Expert.
Oh.
Or an ex, I mean, sure.
No, okay, so expert. I don't know. I guess being happy in a relationship and not going through the same kind of situation, which happens with me, and that is that I'll meet someone, they'll be amazing, and I'll think, oh my god, this person's perfect, I love them, and I'll eventually start dating them, and then after a while, things will start to fizzle out, and I feel like that's the case. It feels like the zeitgeist of our times, really, is just the relationships kind of fizzle out, and it's scary, and that's why I feel like it's one of my dynamics is that I'm afraid of these relationships because they're scary, and they always.
How do you sustain that joy?
Do you feel
at first?
Do you feel like when you're getting, you said they last a few months and then they fizzle out. When you get into a relationship that lasts a few months before it fizzles out, do you get fully in? Are you falling in love?
Right.
So basically what I call that is diving. Like, so what you're doing is you're diving into a relationship. Let me guess, they last about 1 to 3 months, maybe sometimes six.
No. The relationships I get into are longer than that. Probably a year to 2 years.
So the ones that you said last a few months and then fizzle out?
Well, a few months, maybe, you know, honeymoon period for me.
He stays in the relationship. Is what he's saying.
I go down with the ship.
Right. Okay. So, and that is a totally common thing in our era, or maybe all eras. I don't know, but like, people stay in stuff way longer.
Well, I think the commitment right there is that maybe the relationship is going to get
that's
better.
That's obligation. Yeah, that turns into an obligation.
Right. But I mean, that's like the fictitious idea of commitment. It's like, well, I love this person. I'm committed to this person. Like, it was good. Maybe it's going to get better, but not really knowing how it's going to get better. Mm-hmm. And it's really just getting worse.
Okay. So I'm telling you right now, if what you want to do today is figure out how to get into a healthy, happy relationship or something like that, or not right now, but like how to have, what you said was that you want to figure out how to have happiness in a relationship.
Of course,
right? Okay. So if that's what you want to do today, we can probably do that. But
nice. I thought you were with someone right now.
Okay, we're going to navigate that. We're going to navigate that conversation here soon. If you're just now tuning in, you're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. This is a disclaimer. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board members, underwriters, or volunteers. So just so you know that. And if you want to join the conversation, the number's 895-1114. We are going to be right back after some words from Mr. Jim Hightower.
Donnie Trump is said to be the goofiest presidential pretender in the GOP stable. But after all, he's a professional, made-for-TV stuntman. So his P.T. Barnum political shtick is no surprise. But the real surprise is that the flare-haired Donald is getting a serious challenge for goofiest of them all from an amateur practitioner of slapstick, Scott Walker. Only a few weeks ago, the political cognoscenti were hailing the sleepy-eyed Wisconsin governor as one of the, quote, serious candidates in the Republican herd. But he has since done so many splashy flip-flops on his policies that SeaWorld is reportedly trying to hire him to do backflips with Shamu. For example, he had previously been a quasi-sane Republican on the issue of citizenship for some undocumented immigrants. But when Trump surged to front-runner status as a flaming, maniacal immigrant basher, suddenly Scotty began foaming at the mouth like a mad dog, trying to out-bash Donnie. Yes, he yapped, Trump is right that we need to build a big old hermetically sealed wall on the Mexican border, but he frantically exclaimed, we also need to build a wall across our northern border with Canada. Canada? Even Republicans hooted at such overwrought goofiness. As Rand Paul politely put it, that's a pretty dumb idea. So dumb that Governor Goofy collapsed into an addlepated heap of denial. I didn't say that at all, he barked a couple of days later. I've never talked about a wall to the north. Only he had. On Meet the Press, the national TV show, Walker was asked directly, do you want to build a wall north of here, too? Rather than laugh it off, Walker declared with a straight face, that is a legitimate issue for us to look at. This is Jim Hightower saying, a 4,000-mile wall to protect us from friendly Canadians? Or maybe he wants to keep us from escaping to Canada if he becomes president. Walker is serious, all right. Seriously goofy.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
All right, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, and this is Love in the 21st Century, and we are diving into the topic of commitment issues. So Miss Emily Rose is here doing some coaching with our guest, and we are going to get right back into that conversation.
Okay, cool. So we were talking about commitment issues. We were talking about being in relationships, and I just kind of want to dive back in there. I'm going to use that word again, deep diving into relationships pretty quickly that eventually fizzle out. So would you say that when you typically fall in love in a relationship, it does happen fairly quickly?
The older I get, the slower that process is, I feel like. And I don't know, I don't have a barometer with past experiences that tells me how in love I am with someone, you know, compared to when I was younger. So it's hard to make that.
But do you get into relationships and you kind of get swept off your feet and get super involved fairly quickly?
It depends on the person I'm with, honestly. Sometimes if it's a passionate thing and if it feels dangerous almost, then I'll jump in sometimes too fast. But if it's something that feels stable and, man, this might be nice, I might have breakfast every morning at 8 o'clock for the next couple of years or something, then it seems like it takes more time, and it seems like something that I have to cultivate a little bit more, I feel like.
Okay, I have just a curious question then. I have no idea what's going to happen. The relationships that you get into that are kind of dangerous and passionate, versus the relationships you get into quickly, or not as quickly, that are a little more slow going. Can you correlate a breakup pattern there? Are the relationships that you get into more quickly and more passionately, does that person break up with you? And vice versa, when you get in more slowly, do you break up with that person?
I've never actually broken up with someone before. This is going to sound really bad, but the way I sometimes will get out of a relationship is I'll be really bad.
Right, you make it happen. So yeah, it's breaking up. It's just breaking up in a totally, totally uncommunicative way.
Yeah, childish.
Passive aggressive.
Yeah, sweet.
Sort of something like that,
yeah,
right?
That's me.
Okay, so so that question still stands. When you back out of a relationship, are those the relationships you got into more slowly?
Yes. Yeah.
And the ones that you jump into passionately, does that person typically leave you first? The dangerous relationships?
Yes. Yeah, I would say so. But it's not so cut and dry. I think all of my breakups have been very strange. Mm-hmm. They haven't been, hey, this isn't working out for me, and da 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 da. It's usually like, you know, there's a lot of variables going on, and in my life, I've been moving around and very, transient. So that has a lot to do with it as well. And also, I think some of my feelings as well have been, you know, because of I'm taking off in, you know, a month mm-hmm. or so or whatever, and it's hard making a commitment, I guess, when you're not going to be around.
Right. Well, there's that. There's also something I call a love drug dealer and a love drug addict relationship.
Explain.
So if you think of love as the drug, a common commitment phobic based relationship has the dynamic of one person being a love drug dealer and one person being a love drug addict. Ooh. So in the relationship, in typical commitment phobic relationships that have the seed of the relationship based in a fear of commitment, what will happen is two people will become attracted to each other and they are yet emotionally unavailable to each other. An unavailable partner, what that looks like is somebody who's emotionally unavailable, somebody who's physically unavailable due to marriage or proximity, like long distance relationships, inappropriate partners, like really, really big age ranges. These things create inherent barriers to long-term commitment. So when a person enters into a relationship, they are entering either as the love drug dealer or the love drug addict. And what those look like the love drug dealer, the person who has what that other person wants, the person who kind of holds all the cards, who's being pursued. That is the love drug dealer. And that person, from the get-go, when you first meet this, you know, your potential partner, you're usually saying right off the bat, I'm unavailable. Like, you know, either you're saying it outright or you're saying it energetically, like, oh, mate, like, yeah, I'm kind of into this person, you know. So you're creating all of these boundaries, and it's pretty clear that you're not really emotionally available in one way or another. The love drug addict has a really sneaky role, because what this person does is they pour themselves into romantic relationships. When they're in a romantic relationship, the love drug addict just, they give their partner everything. They give the relationship everything. They try and try and try to make it work. And the problem why this role is so sneaky is because from the get-go, they've picked someone who is emotionally unavailable to them. And so And they know this on some level, but usually a very subconscious level. And so they can pour their love and their commitment into this relationship because it is built in to not go truly long term.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And actually, while you were explaining this drug deal to me, I felt I felt some parallels to the kind of the relationship that I'm in now, which isn't not a committed one, but
wait a minute, I thought you were single. I thought this was the whole deal.
I am kind of, yeah.
Jeez.
What? No, yeah, I am. No, totally.
I'm
spending time with someone, but okay, we're not mutually exclusive.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to go that direction.
Yeah, it's okay.
Keep saying what you're
So what you're mentioning, this dynamic of the drug dealer and the user, quote unquote, I feel like I would be the drug dealer in the situation that I'm in right now, because the situation that I find myself in now is I'm with someone, I'm not committed to them, but at the same time, I'm not going to go out and sleep with other people, and we have a lot of fun time together, and we do enjoy each other a lot, you know, it's a good relationship in minus all of the non-committal issues. And so one of the reasons I'm in a non-committed relationship, I'm in this situation with this girl, is because I'm leaving relatively soon, and she knows this, I know this, she can't come with me. And so we have this kind of situation where we spend time together. We basically play out all of the boyfriend girlfriend role, except we know that it's going to end and it's finite, you know. And which also kind of for me feels nice, because there's no it's almost bittersweet, you know. It's not like something that
I know what it's doing, is it's presencing you.
Well, how's that?
It instead of. A red flag for getting into relationships that are inherently based in fear of commitment, one of the biggest red flags is when you're sitting across from the person that you're getting into a relationship with, and you start projecting about your future together. What does the wedding ring look like? What do the kids look like? You know, going down this road. I know, right? It's going to be different for everyone, but like, yeah. So, right, what does the property in Peru look like that we're going to build our earthen home on? You know, whatever your fantasy future is. You know, it's the projection into the future that is a serious red flag for getting, first of all, into commitment-phobic relationships, and also losing yourself in a relationship. And so what this situation seems to be doing for you is presencing you, rather than giving you even the opportunity to get lost in any future projection. The situation is demanding that you stay present, so your experience with this person right now.
Yeah, which is nice.
Which is healthy.
Yeah.
It's ideal.
It feels good.
Right, except for the fact that it's bogged down in a way with an end date and the sphere of commitment, right? So if, for example, the end date for the expiration date, for example, if that wasn't there and you could stay in a place of presence and enjoyment and just living fun together day by day by day.
This is getting scary. You said 3 days in a row now? That's a little That's a lot. That's a lot for me to take.
I didn't realize
right
the extent to which we were dealing with here.
No, yeah.
And didn't you say you're the one who was not afraid of commitment? You're like resistant to, but not afraid, right?
No, I'm not, yeah, it's yeah. I'd say however you want to call it. One analogy that's kind of nice for me, I just realized after you said the end date or expiration date, it's kind of like for me, it's like, you know, you're walking down the shelf of the grocery store and you see a bunch of apples and those look really nice. And then there's, you know, apples, the dehydrated ones in a bag that lasts three times as long, but they're not as tasty. And it's kind of like how I feel like I'm in this relationship with an expiration date. I know it's not going to be around forever. So
what if you had a tree?
Let's enjoy it. Ooh, hey. Yeah, that would be kind of cool, I guess. But then you'd have to water it all the time.
You're right.
And we're in a drought.
Well, you know, that is such an awesome analogy. You do have to water it all the time. And I think that when you're talking about being afraid of commitment, you're talking about being afraid of watering your garden, mm-hmm. watering your relationship, your apple tree.
For sure, yeah.
And when you're in a drought, it sounds to me like maybe you're in an emotional drought and that it is time for you to do some self-care. And they're making whipping noises.
I just feel like you nailed it. Those are whips. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he job. Nailed it. Man, drought. Yeah. And and sometimes we need to replenish our own well before we can pour into another. And the thing is we need to find that bottomless spring within ourselves, which is there. That bottomless spring of love, so we can pour our love into all of our relationships.
Why am I? I'm melting right now. Help! Someone help me.
No. Oh, I hate when I sound so heavy.
I can't feel my legs. Someone help.
Oh, goodness gracious. Save me for myself, guys.
Yeah, that was great. I think that I really liked how you brought that analogy in, sir. and Emily Rose, how you know, wrap that into like the story of like what is really going on, because like you know, he used it a couple times. He brought up the drought and it was just like the parallels of talking about, and then the emotional body, water body, you know, how those relate. And like if that's something that's subconsciously coming up for you a lot, then the idea that we are in a drought, it's like, yeah, like how are you physically or, you know, emotionally relating to that? And mm-hmm. exactly, I know in conversations we've had about the topic that the idea of needing to self-nurture and take care of yourself and like not being interested in committing because you have your own work to do has been something that's come up. So yeah, that mm-hmm. feels right on point.
You know, looking at commitment and singlehood, or rather long-term, you know, monogamous romantic relationships and singlehood, it does come down to a choice. It's a choice of being in or out. And when you can change your mind in that choice, obviously anybody is free to do that at any time. But when you do choose, you're just, instead of, when you choose to bring consciousness into your life, you can do so from a place of singlehood, where you're bringing consciousness into what it is to be you. Who are you? What are you doing? How are you feeling? Where are you going? And you can do that in relationship too. You bring consciousness into the relationship, and that opens the doors for authentic conversation, which opens the doors for a whole new level of self-growth. And that consciousness in a romantic relationship, when you do your work in the relationship, just like you'd be doing it with yourself outside of relationship, you get into conversations with, I don't know, maybe a therapist or a coach or a book, if you're reading a book, whatever you're doing in the relationship to help your relationship consciously. When you choose that, you're growing the relationship and yourself at the same time. And you're watering, you can water both gardens. And then you get into the heart of issues like nitpicking and nagging. That is, and I just have to say, nitpicking, what feels like nitpicking or nagging for a man is an attempt at communication by a woman. Mm. And there is a communication breakdown happening. So there are communication techniques that you can learn that will help you navigate the negative emotions, such as, you know, feeling nitpicked or nagged or resisting someone else's, you know, instruction to change.
Is this nonviolent communication you're talking about?
Yes. Mm. That is absolutely
That's
one tool.
One of the things one of my previous lovers was trying to convince me to do, and I feel like